Bulls are out of timeouts. 2 seconds left. Giddy for the win.
Through the city where the legends play, Chi-town vibes on a sunny day. Big red bus with the seats in line, talking Bulls all day, we stay on the grind. Rolling down the lane in the big red bus, see Red, Fred, and Doug bring the Bulls to discuss. From the Jordan days to the present fuss, it's gold in the convo, so ride with us.
Again, everybody, welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus as we take the glorious monstrosity out on the streets of Chicago. Boy, oh boy, do I have a special guest. As Doug Tonis, a man of industry, can't make it today. He's busy with work. But I look to my right, and lo and behold, it's my good old friend, Mark Hay from Australia. How you doing, brother?
I'm well, Frederick. I'm well. I'm a little saddened that Doug can't join us. He said he had a crisis situation at work, and I'm not sure, but are we able to confirm? Was Doug at a Coldplay concert on the weekend, Fred? Do we know of?
He is a big fan. Who knows? Don't you love these memes that are going out with the different individuals? I think I saw one with Joe Cowley and you. I'm working on one.
There was definitely not a Joe Cowley
and me.
Yeah.
But I mean, what a story. Isn't it crazy? That whole thing is.
Yeah.
All he had to do was kind of play it off. Instead, the reaction, I think, is what caused their eventual breakdown.
Yeah. It's fascinating. It's just a fascinating piece of how the internet can get a hold of something and then turn it into something it's not. So, or maybe it's something it was rather. But it's just interesting to see how everyone ran with it. But yeah, hopefully that's not a situation that Doug finds himself in right now. So, but nonetheless, hopefully next time I'm on, Doug can be part of it too, because he's just left me with you now, and that's a scary proposition.
I can't remember the last time you and I had gone solo, but this is good stuff. This is like more Batman and Robin. I'm driving, and you remember Batman and Robin? You remember how they used to have that motorcycle, and you would sit in the side compartment? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. You're speaking about like the 60s Batman, right?
Yes, yeah. Exactly. That's exactly the image I'm conjuring up. No, but Doug's a captain of industry. He's a big shooter. I don't know if you knew this. So is happening a lot lately. Mm. So luckily, you decided to come in and pinch hit. And I can't thank you enough, brother.
Happy to be here.
You know, I got to say, too, there's a lot of people. I'd say 90% when I announced it that you were coming on with that iconic image. From our good friend Steph No, one of my greatest images ever. I actually have a framed picture. Do you know? Did I tell you this of that down in my basement?
Not yet.
Every time I see it, I smile. But I mean, I'd say 90%, 95% of the reaction was, oh, it's going to be freaking great. And it is, of course, because you always bring it, Mark. But there was a 5% of people that just revolted by this news. And I got to say, I think they misunderstand you. You know, I think you're a really good guy. Let me be honest. You are a fantastic guy. Some of your opinions are a little bit haphazard. But I mean, overall, you're a good dude. So everybody, give this guy a chance, will you? Give him another chance. Why don't you come announce your return to Twitter?
Well,
that's the bigger news.
Why would I do that? I'm not on Twitter. I will not be coming back to Twitter. But I'm sure of the 8 people that are responding to your tweet that you're referring to, that if 95% of those 8 people were satisfactory or complimentary, then that's enough for me. But no, that's fine.
What's so disturbing is, like, out of that 5%, I'd say 95% were Australian. I think your absolute turn on Josh Giddey is what's caused the high degree of anger.
Well,
have you changed your opinion at all? Have you had a chance to reflect and say, hey, let's sign him and let's go?
Look, I've reflected a number of times, and I keep coming back to the same place that, yes, I'm absolutely right in my position. This guy is not someone I want building an offense around. That's we'll touch on the Josh Giddey trade, I'm sure, a little bit later on in more detail. But no, Frederick, I haven't reverted or changed my opinion about that specific deal or most other things, to be honest. I've still holds many of the, or most of the opinions that I had before. So if anyone had problems with them before, I'm assuming they're going to be tuning out at this point right now and probably don't want to hear them again. But yeah, I haven't really changed on my stance on anything else, really. But
hold on one second. I got to ask you this.
Yeah.
A 3-year contract for Josh Giddey at $25 million a year, you're going to be upset over that?
Well, I just don't think that's realistic on any front. Why? I can't imagine he would want 3 years. I can't imagine the Bulls would do 3 years. It's going to be a 4 or 5 year deal, surely.
Well, if it's 4 years at 25 a year, is that really going to keep you up at night?
I mean, it's not. I think this is symptomatic of the Bulls' bigger issues. And what I say is, like, in isolation, you can break down all of these moves or all of their decisions and make reasonable justifications for them in isolation. But then when you put it all together and these slight moves or the slight, you know, issues that we have with certain moves, they start compounding and it gets you into a situation where it's just like, I don't know, it's problematic in that regard. So no, in isolation, would $25 million a year for Giddy be a problem? No, but where it becomes a problem is you start engineering your entire functionality of your offense around this guy who I don't think should be your primary guy. You're not paying him from a salary point of view to be a primary guy, but he will in effect be that on the Chicago Bulls. And that's my issue with the whole acquisition of Josh Giddy is that for him to be at his best, he needs to have the ball in his hand, and I just don't think he's good enough to have the ball in his hand. Now, I mean, maybe that doesn't matter because the Chicago Bulls stink, and they'll be the 10th or 11th best team in the East, and they're irrelevant in a lot of different ways, so maybe it doesn't actually come back to bite him in that regard because the Bulls more broadly are so irrelevant, but I don't know. I think when we're talking about just good and best practice and the way you'd want a smart team to operate, I don't think you put the ball in Josh Giddey's hand and build everything around it.
I don't think that's going to happen. I take some solace in the fact that, and I think you would agree, he surprised me at the end of last year that I thought he performed pretty well even off the ball when, you know, Coby White was still a primary ball handler there down at the end of the season. Obviously the Eastern Conference player in a month in March. I mean, he still handled the ball quite a bit. And Josh showed that they could hit open three there. I mean, it's not like to the level that it was of concern for me that he's going to be completely worthless without the ball in his hands. Don't you concur on that? Well, you saw some improvement there.
Well, that assumes that 20-game sample, 25-game sample, whatever we're talking about, that last portion of the season, that's going to hold and that's just who he is going forward. And I don't believe that right now. Maybe that opinion changes over the next coming months when we get more data on that. But like, us, you know, Bulls fans going crazy about that run at towards the end of the season where they won, 15 of their last 20 or whatever it was. I'm sure Arturas has, you know, espoused the brilliance of his young and up and coming team in that regard a number of different times. But I don't buy that just yet. And because I don't buy that, like, why should I be putting more stock into that 20 game sample and not the first 50 games of Josh Giddey's run in Chicago where he was having to play next to better and more established guys? Like, why should I be concerning myself with that last 20-game sample and assuming that's just how it's going to be and that everything else is, whether it's in his initial phase of his Chicago stint or what he did in OKC, like, that's just foregone? Why would I do that? It doesn't make sense.
Well, I think that's a fair point, but I guess the big differentiator was he actually shot the ball from three at a very high percentage.
Yeah, but he's done that before.
And, you know, he's unsustainable. No, he hasn't shot 50% over 30 games before.
Well, not
he was shooting around 50%, Mark.
No, but he's had stretches of basketball where he's shot it well and then just leveled back down. So maybe not to the same degree or the same percentages or whatever it might be, but it was still a low-volume thing. He still wasn't regarded like an actual shooter. Let's see. Maybe he can change the narrative. But right now, you know, if everyone's hanging their hat on that 20-25-game sample, whatever it might be, I'm more in prove it mode, and I don't think a 20 game sample is enough proof.
The other differentiator is that he actually got to the line quite a bit.
Yeah.
In that sample, much more so than any other time in his career. And at the age of 22, you know me. I was a guy who embraced your Gideon term to start the year, but he turned me around by the end of the give you full credit for that one.
So you're a Gideon now, is what
great
you're
stuff.
Saying. Absolute Gideon.
Yeah, I'm a Gideon now. I'm an absolute Gideon. I'm totally fine with them signing him. I'm glad they're playing hardball. I got to tell you, like, dude, no one's been more critical of Acme than me. I thought they absolutely deserved to be terminated after this 5-year stretch of complete, you know, incompetence. But man, oh man, with the Coro move, that's what you like an A+, which will go down as one of the best moves in history of the organization.
God.
Trey Jones, I love that move. Now they're holding out on Josh Giddey, trying to get a contract more in line with what he should be paid. This is they're getting a lot better suddenly recently, and obviously the modest pick. Like, so, yeah. Hey, we got to be open minded on stuff. Like, you got to at least admit that. You know, Mark, they're doing better.
Are they? are they really, like, this sounds like Stockholm Syndrome and Bulls fans talking themselves into the fact that, oh, maybe AK is not as bad as what we thought he was. And people are talking themselves into this just because they know that they're stuck with Arturas and Eversley and Billy Donovan and nothing's going to change from the framework's perspective. So I think people just look at certain things from a rose-colored glasses. Like, even the Yuki thing from the other day. Like, people were losing their minds about signing Yuki Kawamura, which I, too, understand why. He's fun and exciting to see, watch play basketball and the energy that he brings more generally. He's just a fun basketball player. But you would have thought that the Bulls were actually doing something of relevance or, you know, doing something notable in that regard, given the amount of fanfare and noise you had heard about that. But Yuki's probably been the only guy outside of confirming this for me. Like, obviously beyond Asenge, who they just drafted, but is Yuki the only free agent they've signed that's come from outside the organization this offseason? Am I correct? Am I forgetting someone at this point?
I'm trying to think. I think that is probably true.
I mean, they traded for Okoro. He's new in that regard. So he's a trade. And Asenge is obviously a draft pick. But I don't think they've made any other actual free agent signing, which is not surprising given they had so many guaranteed contracts on the roster. So there's not many things they could have done. But my point being, like, are they really that much better? Yeah, okay. You could say the Matas pick is looking pretty good right now. Let's see about Asenge. Let's see about Giddy, but I don't know, Frederick. I don't think they've turned the corner that much, and they still continue to lose deals on the margin. I know you love the Okoro deal, and we can get into that in a little bit more detail. But that's another one. That's another deal that they lost on the margins, which is a continuing theme. You can go to the DeMar DeRozan trade, whether that was back in 21 or 24, the Zach LaVine trade. There's been a whole number of things where they continue to lose on the margins. They're still dumb.
How are they losing on the margins trading Lonzo Ball for anything? The guy hasn't played after an All-Star game in 4 years. I mean, what are we talking about?
Well, I had a bet.
This whole idea of Lonzo Ball. Give me your reasoning why they lost on the margins with Lonzo Ball. The fact they got more than a loaf of bread for him is a win, in my opinion. The guy never plays. He's always hurt. He didn't play well last year.
Well,
what are you so excited about?
Not suggesting about like they needed to keep Lonzo, because that's not what I'm arguing, but again, it just comes back to negotiation. And even putting aside the potential, and it's all assumptions and speculations as to whether they could have moved Lonzo at the last trade deadline from that Grizzlies pick or whatever it was. Putting that aside, because who knows if that was actually true. But even if it's not, like, it's very similar to the Giddy deal in the sense where you had a team, you had some leverage over a team, but you didn't exercise that leverage because of reasons. Who the hell knows why? Like, the Cavs were in a really difficult financial situation with the Bulls really assisted them on, and couldn't extract any additional value. Like, I know you love Okoro, and I'm not speaking to the right person in this regard because you're so blinded by his inability to play basketball and you actually think he's good when he's not. But the point being, like, they should have been able to extract a second round pick or a number of second round picks to take on Okoro's deal. It's guaranteed money. Okoro is going to eat into their, vaunted 2026 free agency.
He's making $10 million.
He's still going to eat into their money. He's still going to eat into their money.
As any draft pick would have. Any draft pick would have eaten into their money. It's $10 million.
He's
far better than any mid-round draft pick that they would have got. Come on. I mean, this idea that I don't understand why you don't like Okoro.
Because he's a bust. What are you talking about?
He's not a bust. He's one of the best defenders in the league. His coach called him last year the best perimeter defender. No, he does. You're going to regret this. I don't even want to get into this because you like showing that video on draft night where I'm like very upset that the Cavs were smart enough to get Okoro. Well, the fact is that he's going to thrive in this system. That's the other issue too, is they never really played with pace. I guess last year they did a little bit more, but they still weren't like at the Bulls level. This guy's going to thrive in this situation, no longer playing behind two all-stars and actually, but people act like he wasn't good for them. Everybody you talk to who really understands the Cavs will tell you he was their best perimeter defender.
That's not saying much. That's a team full of zero perimeter defenders. So like,
they were one of the top five teams in the league, yeah, defense. What are you talking about?
Buoyed by their
partly because of him.
No, well, I was going to say buoyed by their bigs up front. I would suggest, given the fact the defensive player of the year on their team, I think that helps more than Isaac Okoro just quietly. But do you know who Bulls fans are with Okoro? And I don't know. I'm not on Twitter, so I don't know what the sentiment is. But at least for you, You know that meme where that boyfriend meme where he's holding hands with his girlfriend and then that other girl walks past him and he sort of looks over his shoulder? Like, that meme is the Bulls fans when it comes to Patrick Williams and Isaac Okoro. Like, they're both busts, fourth pick, fifth pick from the 2020 draft. They both stink. All you're doing is you've got a new version of stinkiness on your roster and you're just allured by that fact and you're sick of Patrick Williams. That's all this is. That's all this is.
I'll be damned if you're going to compare Patrick Williams, Isaac Okoro. There is no comparison. Isaac Okoro plays balls out. You got quote after quote from coaches all throughout this league talking about how great the guy is on the defensive end, how he's unselfish and he helps you win. You can't find a quote from a mascot about Patrick Williams. Give me a break. There's no doubt you are way off. You've never been more wrong on this, and I'm keeping receipts on the Isaac Okoro stuff. We're going to go back to this stuff because he's going to have an awesome
Firstly, who's
year.
Interviewing a mascot about Patrick Williams? It's a false equivalency there. No one's interviewing mascots for starters. But I mean, there were a lot of glowing things and remarks made about Patrick Williams at certain points in time, but the point is both players have not amounted to anything that either team that drafted them would have hoped for. They're both disappointments. They've both failed to live up to expectations. You could say they do certain things well on the court, and yes, Okoro can defend, but by and large they're both busts
and dunk.
They're busts. So let's just push this.
I'd much rather talk to a mascot than any Bulls fan for the last 5 years about Patrick Williams, because the vast majority of them have just told me, patience. He's going to be great. He's only 19, 20, 21, 22. I can't take it anymore. I'd rather talk to the Benny the Bull for an hour where he doesn't just nods or dumps popcorn on my head than let another Bulls fan tell me about how good Patrick Williams is going to be.
Wow.
He sucked. I knew he was going to suck. He doesn't play hard. And he's the exact opposite type of player than Okoro is. Okoro is going to is going to surprise you, Mark, because he's going to remind you a lot of like Alex Caruso. Caruso. God. He does that kind of stuff that helps you win.
No.
And I think the Cavs are going to be hurt by it.
Speaking of talking to mascots, I feel like I'm talking to Isaac Okoro mascot at this point. Like, the only people that can feel so fondly about Isaac Okoro are you and his mother. That could be the only two people that could feel so or speak so highly of the young man. But look, hopefully you're right. I don't think you're going to be right because generally you're not. But let's see.
You're a Ryan Arcinakino.
You almost pronounced his last
name. Mascot.
Almost pronounced his last name.
Ryan, not in the NBA. Archie, not in the NBA.
There you go.
Mascot. Hey, let's get into Yuki a little bit, because I got to say, I am excited about this. And I'm not going to let you bring me down on the Yuki mania. Because, I mean, you can't ignore the height. Like, that is a major limitation, and I get it. A lot of tall players. You know, that I hear a lot of people say, well, there's a lot of tall players out there too, and they're not doing it. Yeah, but they're tall. You know, that's why they're out there, is because you can't teach size, and you don't see average 5'8 players in the league unless they bring very, something very special to the table. And that's what Yuki has, man. He's got elite vision. He's got great feel for setting up teammates. I love how he plays with pace and, you know, purpose, for lack of a better word. And in a way, I think he's kind of like a poor man's Trae Young. I think, although Trey's probably a better shooter and a passer, overall.
And everything else. Yeah.
You can't, but Yuki, I mean, he can consistently hit. If he can hit that outside shot, like he showed, I think he was 6-9 from three in his last game in Summer League, he's got a shot to stick as a spark plug off the bench. And I think that's the role he could serve. Regardless, like, I still want him on the team because I think he's the kind of player that really helps make his teammates better. Like, he's a guy out there that's going to play with energy. He's going to set you up for success and help build your confidence. What say you?
I mean, I don't disagree. Like, I really enjoyed watching Yuki play. I'm just talking about, like, the greater context of what this actually means. Like, he's a fun player. I love his energy. I like the way he passes the ball, obviously, the energy he plays with more broadly. He's a fun player. And the fact that he is so small and is able to impact the game the way he does, like, it's just a nice story in a lot of different ways. So I'm not trying to, I don't know, be a complete downer about him getting the roster spot, the two-way, because he definitely deserved it and earned that deal. But what I'm just saying is, like, of consequence, it doesn't really mean anything, is what I'm getting at. He's not going to actually play on the real team. You know, Bulls fans like to talk about how there were so many guards on this team and on this roster. Like, how could you possibly add any more guards, whether it's through the draft, free agency, or whatever it might be? Like, Yuki's just not going to play for the actual team unless there's, you know, just a catastrophic injury or two. Yes, he could have some value on the G League team, and yes, if Ezenge is playing more G League minutes, then maybe Yuki can help Noah in that regard. But by and large, like, this is, doesn't mean that much, I guess, is my point. When, and I know, yes, Bulls fans, you know, are reveling in the whole Yuki mania right now. And I, you know, so be it, I guess, in that regard, they can. But I just think that just speaks to the broader issue at hand, that this is the only thing that Bulls fans, at least this offseason so far, let's see about the Giddy thing, but this is the only thing you can really, really celebrate right around now. Because even Asenge, like, he looked okay in moments during Summer League, but there was other moments where you're like, yeah, this is still years away. There's not a lot to be excited about. And the point being is, like, someone like Yuki, who can just show some ounce of life, can have fans being enthralled with something so small. And I don't mean that based on his stature, but just in terms of the consequence of where he sits on the team. It's crazy. It's crazy. But I mean, this is the Chicago Bulls. So
he's got to help Noah, though. Like, I understand why, like, last year on the, you know, 28-year-old Ryan Archer, not in the NBA, was on the Windy City Bulls. I remember being at a game, the last game of the regular season, where he airballed a wide open three with 2 minutes left. I'll never forget it. And I know, it, you know, he was there not just to draw in, like, teenage girls and you. He was there because, you know, he's a super nice guy. He plays hard. He tries to set an example for the younger guys on the team, you know, what it means to be a professional. Work hard, stay ready. I'm totally fine with that. Like, every team needs one or two guys like that. It's future in the NBA, it's non-existent. Yuki, I at least could see him having a role on a professional team as a bench, like a bench player, like a guy who comes off the bench to really kind of serve as a, you know, spark plug or whatever. So, I mean, I'm totally fine. I'm excited. I can't wait. I'm going to get out to a lot of G League games. I think he's going to help Noah Asenge. Overall, it sounds like you're kind of meh on Noah and his performance so far, but I thought that wasn't a terrible pick. I saw enough in the summer league to say, well, I can understand why they took him. He's a major project. He's not going to help next year, but you could see, man, the size and the athleticism. There's something potentially there.
Yeah, no, I don't think it was a bad draft pick or anything like that. I think, you know, if it hits, it'll be obviously a very good one. Let's see. It's not like they reached on him. He was, you know, mocked to go in that sort of range. So in that regard, it's fine. I just hopefully the fan base is patient and just don't expect too much from this guy too soon. And I think if he hits, it'll be nice. There's definitely, he feels like he's a long way away in a lot of respects, but yeah, I can see the outline as to what makes him intriguing and why you would take the punt on, you know, drafting someone like him. But there's nothing you saw from him that would suggest that he's going to impact the team, the big team this season coming forward. And again, that just speaks to my point more broadly. Like, kind of feels like the exact same team is coming back in a lot of respects, and it doesn't feel new or different, and they're just going to try to build on that last 20-game sample that we were speaking about. And, I mean, they better hope that hits, because if they don't, then what comes next, I guess, is the point. But time will tell.
Well, I think what they're counting on is the trajectory of three key players was obviously on the way up at the end of last year with Coby White, who you never believed in, who I always stood by. He clearly had, I mean, Eastern Conference Player of the Month in March. You know, dopes don't win that award. You got to be good for a long time. And if you look at the history of that award, almost every player that's ever won it has been a very good, impactful player in the NBA. You look at him on the trajectory up, Modest on the trajectory up. You know, I'm definitely not as bullish as some people are that he's going to be an all-star next year, but I see a lot of good stuff, and I'm excited about that draft pick. And Josh Giddey, those three guys are three young guys, all 26 and under, that are on the way up. I don't think it's crazy for a Bulls fan to feel, hey, you know what? There might be something here. Like, obviously, we got to get rid of the carcass of Vooch and finally get a center that can protect the rim and play a little bit of defense. But there's some at least hope here. I don't sense I think there's a lot more desperation in your voice than in mine. I do feel a little bit warmer on the team than you.
I mean, there's,
and plus Isaac Okoro. I mean, I don't want to get into that, but I mean, that's a huge addition. Go on.
Well, I was just going to say, there's no desperation, because I don't ultimately care. I'm just intrigued to bust your balls on this Bulls podcast, and I guess talk Bulls in that regard. But we should stop. Can we just stop referring to Coby White as a young player? Like, it's year 7 coming up. He'll be 26 in February. He's not a young player
anymore. He's 25.
Yeah, but he'll be
25 is pretty young.
He'll be 26 during the season. Like, he's not young. Like, Manus is young. Asenge is young. Like, you know, 18, 19, 20. That's young. But I don't want to hear or listen to anyone talk about how Coby White is part of this young nucleus. Like, Coby White is good. Coby White should be on this team. But can we stop just referring to him and Io and Okoro and Patrick Williams as young guys? Like, they're 5-6 year veterans, depending on the player we're talking about. Like, let's get realistic. So, and look, even then, like, are we 100% sure, 100% sure that Kobe's on this team in a month's time? And even if he is Kobe and White on this team in a year's time? Like, I haven't gotten that sense of confidence or the sense from the Bulls that they're building this thing around Kobe White and Giddey and Mattis. Like, if anything, like, it just feels kind of like the same old Kobe thing where it's a year-to-year proposition. And I've never gotten the sense from Arturis or whoever connected with the Bulls that Kobe is just a foundational piece. I don't feel that, even after the season that he had, like, in the last one in 24, but even the one that just went past. I still don't feel like Kobe is locked down and is going to be part of this thing for the next foreseeable years, 3-5 years, whatever it might be. And I'm not suggesting that he shouldn't be or should be. I'm just saying I haven't gotten the sense from the Bulls that he's absolutely one of their guys. Giddey, yes. Mattis, yes. Asenge, assuming he progresses, then yes. But I don't know. I kind of feel like Kobe's going down that Levine path in that regard, in terms of being someone that Arturis is currently stuck with, but I'm not sure he's wedded to.
Well, that's because he didn't draft him. I mean, it's the last remnant of Garpax, and it happens to be the best player on the team and the best leader on the team and the guy that everybody looks up to. And Kobe White has continually every year busted through year limitations and year ceiling. And I believe he'll do so this year. I think he's going to be an all-star this year. I predicted this. And hey, you've laughed at my Kobe White comments multiple years, even on CHGO. I remember the first time I was on there, right before he really took that incredible step and finished the year incredibly well. Do you remember that? I still remember that like it was yesterday, where I had some comment to the effect of Io and Kobe could form the, you know, very good backcourt in the future, and then you start chuckling on air. Do you remember? I remember all these. I write these down. That was part of the lyrics in my
mind. It slipped my mind. Just fortuitously slipped my mind. But like, even Io, like, are we sure Io is going to be here for the next however many years? Like, they're both free agents. Maybe more so with Io, maybe you could get him back on the extension. But with Kobe, you're definitely not going to get him on the extension. You'll have to use cap space to sign him if you want to retain him. And like, what does his next deal look like? But even then, like, thinking about like when Asenge will be at his peak, assuming he gets there, or even Mattis, like Mattis is 20. Let's say he's 24, 25 is when he's really leaping into stardom, assuming he gets there. Like at that point, Kobe's 30, 31, and that's where the Zach LaVine timeline becomes apt, in the sense that when Zach was 26, 27, you had guys like Kobe and Larry and Patrick Williams who were closer to 20, and they kind of weren't on Zach's timeline as well. And this feels very similar in that regard with Kobe now in place of Zach, where he is becoming the new Zach LaVine, and in so many different ways, but potentially also with the next contract as well. Like, people hated Zach LaVine's max deal. What does Kobe's deal look like as well? Like, we all love and respect what Kobe's doing now, but if you're paying him 30, 35, 40 million, like, yeah, are people going to still hold the same level of respect or platitude for Kobe at that point?
Still 10 or 15 million less than Zach LaVine. I don't even think it's remotely comparable. First of all, like, Kobe White, I think, is just, for whatever reason, more beloved by the fan base than Zach was. Zach was a flashpoint, I thought. You know, there were a lot of people who absolutely hated him. You and I think we were probably on the side that I respected Zach LaVine and really appreciated what he did for the Bulls. And I think he's a good dude. And, you know, I felt like there's no way I think those are two remotely comparable situations. Only in that, like, you're going to say, well, he's going to get overpaid. I don't think he is overpaid at $30 million. I'll admit if he's getting a max deal, but that's not going to happen. I mean, people are much smarter now with the cap situation, and he's going to get somewhere between 30 and 40 million, and that's what he should be paid as the leader of the team, as the best player on the team. And so the question is he going to be worth that dollar amount? Well, if he makes an all-star team, I say, hell yeah. And if as long as he and Josh can prove they can play together as a good backcourt, all this is going to be fine. And then at that point, you just focus on, hey, let's get a center that can actually guard somebody. And pick up the mess. Like, if you really just, that's the issue with the Bulls to me, is their front court defense has been pretty much horrible since, for like 4 years, ever since Vooch walked through the door. And that's continuing an issue that just hasn't been addressed or at any point. And their rim defense is so bad that it's never allowed them really take that next step.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think the issue has been in the backcourt at all for the most part.
No.
Even Zach LaVine, he gets a lot of crap, and, you know, and even DeRozan to a lesser extent, who probably gets a little bit more of a pass. But you know, those guys aren't great defenders, but it's on the offensive end, they were fantastic basketball players. So the issue was in the front court defensively. Just Vooch never cut it and didn't shoot the ball well enough until last year to make up for his shortfalls on the defensive side. What say you?
Well, I mean, I agree, but like the I mean, this is still part of my annoyance with this franchise. Like it's everything we're talking about now is like built around this idea of luck or hope, or you know, we hope Manus becomes an all-star or whatever it is, or we hope Kobe becomes an all-star. We hope Giddy lives up to this and that. And we can continue down the path. But, like, this is the frustration with the Bulls. And, you know, particularly when you see other teams and the way they operate, like, they just don't give themselves additional chances to, I don't know, mitigate anything not going to plan or not the luck not hitting in that regard. Like, I kind of feel sorry for Manus right now, and I know he talks tough and, you know, he's, you know, wanting to be the franchise guy, wanting to put it all on his shoulders, wanting to bring a championship to Chicago, all that sort of stuff. But, like, it shouldn't just be all on Manus to save the Bulls from themselves. Like, that's not fair. And I don't think they're doing, anything really beyond that. You know, turning up every season and trying to win 30 games, turning up to the draft with their one draft pick and trying to hit on that one draft pick. Like, they're not really supporting Modest. And if you're a believer in Giddy, like, I don't think they're doing everything they can to support Giddy or more broadly the young talent on this team, whether it's having other avenues to add talent. Everyone's talked about the 2026 cap space plan, which is going to amount to absolutely nothing. You can already see where this is going. It's going to be nothing, but they don't have additional surplus picks coming through. Let's see about that Portland pick, but and I know the Blazers are trying to win right now, but the West is still stacked and they're probably not going to, and that pick may never convey. Like, where are these additional picks coming from that potentially could help, you know, the next wave, like your Modestes and the Sengays? And if you just go into the draft one time every year and, you know, if you're picking in that 12 to 15 range every year, like, where are you going to get that center of the future that you're referring to? And again, like, it comes down to luck that you hope that whoever you draft at whatever position can, you know, dramatically exceed that. Whereas, I don't know. They talk about not taking shortcuts, not skipping steps, all this nonsense that Mark Eversley talked about at his press conference, whenever it was after the draft. And it's just like, guys, you're continuing to do this dumb stuff over and over and again. It's just, I don't know. They're frustrating. They still annoy me, Frederick. It's the point, even though I'm somewhat disconnected, they're still a stupid basketball team.
I think you're getting a little bit lost in, well, you know, the free agency plan for 2026. Yeah. I don't think that – I agree with you that they're not going to sign anybody who's going to be great or really impactful, likely. That's likely the case. But the fact that you're going to get, you know, Zach Collins and Herder and the artist formerly known as Vooch off the roster, it gives you flexibility and you're able to make moves – you know, maybe like a Jonathan Isaac or really good defense. That's to me the biggest screaming issue is you need a center or a four to at least help Modest who can really defend the rim and defend the front court. And if you're able to do that by taking advantage, having flexibility and making moves from teams that are, you know, trying to purposely lose, then take advantage of that or trying to clear cap space. And that's what happens when you're able to have a lot more cap space. So I do feel like I agree with you. Yeah, it's probably I don't see anybody out there in the 2026. Oh, I mentioned Jonathan Isaac. Is he an unrestricted free agent? He might be, I think, next year. By like a lot.
Even if he is, man, I would not want him anywhere near my basketball team.
He's 27.
Just no.
He's a fantastic defender, and he's 27. As a defender, he's a player that you absolutely would want on your team. And so, I mean, there's guys like that, though. You know, Mark, that's what I'm saying. Like, I hope they have a plan, and I think they do realize it based on the news that who they were trying to go for in this last draft.
Colomara Boyles, so on.
CMB. That shows at least they understand that's where we need to get better. So enough of that. Let's put that to bed. I understand your frustrations. I think there's more hope than you do. Of course. But, you know, I've always probably been that way.
Yes.
Exactly. We're singing the same tune. Let's get into your top five mistakes from this crew. I will admit, I was really down. I was really upset that they did after 5 years. When you think about that, after 5 years, how many years are we going to be on this orb before Lucky? 70 to 80?
Wow.
90 maybe? We'll see. 5 years is a long time. 5 years is a long time to be given the opportunity to be a GM of a basketball team and have one playoff win. So,
do you know what I love about this upcoming segment that we're about to launch into? Is you just spent the last half an hour telling, but you know, your seven listeners about how there's hope and how there's Arturas is on the mend and he's making better decisions, all this sort of stuff. And now we're going to spend the next half an hour talking about all the faults that he's had over the last 5 years. That really, really instills confidence, I'm sure, in a lot of your listeners.
Well, I'm going to tell you a personal story in a little bit about how a mistake can make you a better man and not repeat that mistake. And I think I'm hoping that they're learning from their mistakes and they're getting better, because I think they absolutely have gotten better for the reasons I highlighted with the Modest pick, Okoro, et cetera, et cetera. But let's until then, let's bookmark that. Let's get into your top five reasons why these guys have really sucked.
I've only got five. Is that what you said?
Yeah, rank them. What's your number one mistake they made in 5 years? Let's start at five, the fifth biggest mistake.
Well, look, I didn't put any of these
in. Did you get this in the pregame show?
Yeah, I mean, you sent me through a terribly managed agenda, which is not a surprise, because this is like the of all Bulls podcasts out there, this has to be like the worst managed in terms of agenda or, you know, recording processes or just general upkeep of how to manage a podcast. Like, I think the
appeal. I think it leads to a certain charm.
I was about to say, like, that's the appeal of it, I suppose. That comes with the bus. People understand that this is an old, worn down, rickety bus that doesn't really move anywhere, but, you know, there's just some hobos sleeping in it. But I think people are aware of that now. But nonetheless, I got your agenda is what you asked for. I come back to a point that I mentioned before. I don't think that these Arturas and Mark Eversley have an overwhelming amount of just completely egregious moves. I think what this is more so a situation of a death by a thousand cuts, where, like I said before, they lose out on the margins. They give someone an extra year than they shouldn't have, or they overpay by however million annually. And yeah, okay, in isolation, you could make arguments as to why it might be okay. But then when you put it all together and it compounds, it leads you to the situation where the Bulls are in now or have been in the last few years. So that's my general statement up the top. But I think, again, I haven't ordered them in any way, but let's just start with the one that you love to hit on, certainly the one that Doug loves to hit on as well. The Vooch trade. I'm not going with the Vooch trade itself. I'm going with the Vooch re-signing. Because I will go to my grave thinking the Vooch trade itself wasn't as bad as certain people on this big red bus like to make it out to be. But I think the 3 years that the Bulls saw with Vooch and having lived that experience, then to sign him again to a three-year deal with the last year is absolutely guaranteed. And now you find yourself in this situation now where you're stuck with him and maybe you could have moved on from him, but you foolishly didn't. Like the re-signing of Vooch, I think, is far more problematic than the initial trade.
I would say the re-signing to a three-year deal when no one was going to give him anything more than two. Yeah. I'm fine if they wanted to re-sign him, if they felt like he was going to be good. And he did have a good year last year, but to show, especially shooting the three, I mean, there's a tremendous amount of value on the offensive end. He was terrible defensively. He's been that way since he's been here. But, you know, he shot the ball incredibly well. I think it was his best year from shooting the three. And you still can't trade him because everybody knows he's on the downside of his career. He's 35 and he can't guard anybody. He's horrible defensively. And $20 million is far too much for him. Look at Brooke Lopez got, what did he get?
$9
million. $9 million? Something. Yeah, $9 million. Yeah. And so he should be getting about half that. And you could have easily moved him, or you could have just let him walk, you know, after 2 years, have a team option. But that third year killed you. And so I agree. Like I was for the initial trade with the exception that Aminu absolutely killed you. Taking Aminu in meant that when you traded him to the Spurs for DeRozan, you had to throw in Thad Young there, which eventually they turned into a first rounder. You know what I mean? These little mistakes compound on themselves. So, and doubling down on the mistake of Vooch and doubling down on the mistake of Patrick Williams, to me, are the two egregious moves.
Go on. Well, I mean, you've touched on Patrick Williams. Everyone, well, I shouldn't say everyone. That's assuming people won. Listen to me back in the day, which is a high assumption because it's probably not the case. And most certainly, most people probably have forgotten about me at this point. So they probably don't remember what my Patrick Williams takes were, but I was never a Patrick Williams guy. And I think it's been proven after the fact. Well, it's already been proven. We knew this very early on, but some people are a little slow to it. But I think it's very clear at this point that drafting of Patrick Williams was a mistake, as was signing him to that 5-for-90 deal as well without getting to contested or letting him contest his restricted free agency process. Just the whole Patrick Williams experience, let's just label it like that. Like, that is obviously a foundational mistake. And it will happen at a very similar time to the whole trade of the Vucevic thing as well. A lot of I was going to say Garpax. That was a Freudian slip. But a lot of Acme sort of issues really started in that when they first got on. Whether it was an experience thing, I don't know. Who the hell knows? But nonetheless, a lot of their mistakes around that period. But yeah, Patrick Williams has to be on the top five, surely. Bad moves.
Well, also, the bigger mistake. It's fine taking a big swing with him, and then, but you should have seen really quickly, he doesn't play hard. He plays half speed. He's he does have value as a three-point shooter, and he is a pretty good one-on-one defender. I think much worse as a help defender. I have no problem, again, when you want to resign him. You don't give him a player option in $20 million a year. It's insane. Like, you could have easily played hardball with him and got him for 15. And, you know, if another team's going to match him, so be it. Then you pay. Nobody was going to give him $25 million. Like, this whole idea that the Pistons or some other team were going to give him a lot of money is, I think, insane. And so, you know, you just cost, again, this commitment, a long-term commitment for a player that you can't even trade now is just compounding of these bigger mistakes. Like, I'd also put, they've done this a lot, these little signings where they're throwing the player option 3 years at Javon Carter, makes $6.5 million. Doesn't look like a big deal when you get him, but again, it's also a massive signal. You never believed in Kobe White. You didn't understand what you had internally. Mm-hmm. Kobe White has outplayed every one of these players. Javon Carter, you know, Ball to a certain extent. Obviously, that was probably much more on the injury front than he's not better than Lonzo Ball. We all agreed that. But Goran Dragic bringing him in, another mistake. Every year they brought in another guard to take away minutes from him, and it's just crazy. You know, like, and then like a guy like Jalen Smith, too.
Yeah.
That questionable contract, 8.5. The free agent signings have been terrible. And finally, the Josh Giddey trade, to me, is the other one, is where nothing against Josh Giddey. I think he could make 10 All-Star games in a row. It's not going to take away from the fact that you were unable to at least garner another draft asset for a player that was, by the time you made that trade, was unplayable in the playoffs and was a bench player. Oklahoma City asked him to come off the bench. And then he asked for a trade, and you still weren't able to get a draft asset in addition to for Alex Caruso, who was desired by every team. The Boston Celtics just won a title with a team filled of 3-and-D guys that were switchable on the perimeter. Every contender wanted Alex Caruso. This has been repeated by journalists all throughout the league. And, you know, this is another one of those issues that Doug and I argue about all the time. Like, the fact that they couldn't get another pick for him is insane.
It's insane. It's partly insane. I had the Giddey trade on my list. So I'm liking where this is going, Frederick. There's a lot of agreement here. I'm pulling you back to the dark side. the Giddey trade was a disaster. I can hear it in your voice. I know deep down you believe that, and I know you're trying to convince yourself that you are a Giddeyit. But I think deep down you know you're not a true believer, and I think you're correct in that regard. Deep down in your heart. But yeah, the Giddey trade is obviously on the list for the reasons you stated. Alex Caruso, there was just some Bulls fans that just, well, they're dumb, let's be honest, but they just never truly understood or respected the impact of Alex Caruso. And you, even now, when they got done watching this guy probably be the third most impactful guy on a championship team, there's still some Bulls fans out there that are arguing, you know, the nonsense about the Giddey thing and how the Bulls will actually be, the Bulls will be fine with Giddey. And yeah, they may, but that's not the point. The point is they could have had Giddey plus something, and that would have enabled the Bulls to be in a bit better position. Coming back to my point of before around, like, what are the Bulls doing to support Giddey, to support Manus, and to ensure the next wave is as best supported or as best set up as possible to be successful? Like, This Giddey trade itself was just a perfect encapsulation of them not pushing as hard as they could on whatever it might be, not negotiating to the nth degree and losing out, and not maximizing what they had in their assets. So they have this combination where they don't maximize their guys, and then they have this additional combination where they overpay for certain guys. And like we said before, you put that all together in isolation, it might be okay, but when you add it all up, it becomes problematic. I think the Jalen Smith one is a good example where he wasn't on my list because there's far more problematic things, but you pay a guy who at that point, which was, I guess, nearish to mid-level money, not completely from memory, but close. The dude ended up being your third-string backup second center by the end of last season. Like, it's fine. Like, he's not a bad player, and maybe it's movable in the last year of its deal, but this guy has now 2 years guaranteed at, what, 9, 10 million, somewhere in that vicinity, and he's going to be starting this upcoming season likely as your third string backup. Like, it's just small things like that on the margins that don't make sense. Like, even Trey Jones. Like, I like Trey Jones. Why are you giving this guy 3 years, 24? I understand that the third year is a team option, but even then, like, did you really need to bring this guy back for a 2 years guaranteed? Could you not done a straight 2 year deal? Like, who was paying Trey Jones 3 years for 24? Like, it's anyways, I'm ranting now.
Well, I mean, you make a lot of good points. I'm a little bit more warm on Trey Jones than you.
I like him.
I know that might be a victim of the moment.
I just don't think
he played really well for us.
Yeah, he's good.
But again, It's also kind of like the victim of the moment. Like, he played really well, but it's a pretty short, if you look at his career, kind of a little bit of a short window or a sample size for him playing at that level. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, but when you just add it up, you look, they overpaid Williams by at least $5 million. You overpay Vooch by $10 million. You overpay, you know, a Javon Carter by a few million, or any of these players, even like, Jalen Smith. Not Isaac Okoro. He's underpaid. But all these other guys, you add them up, that's 20 to 30 million every year that you're overpaying when you add them all up. And in an era now where it's basically a hard cap, you can't keep doing that. I will say, I do feel good that they seem to start playing their a little bit more, understanding this and negotiating a little bit harder. I thought they negotiated like that with Io, which was weird. I think they really played hard, hardball with him when he was a restricted free agent. And they did the same thing with Coby White. They just got to do it more often. I am feeling a little bit better. You've highlighted all these mistakes. I'm hoping they're learning from these mistakes, though. I am taking a little bit of solace in that.
I don't know.
Why don't we get into this to wrap it up? Because an analogy, I do have an analogy with Acme. So do you want to go first get into what is the biggest mistake of your life that you haunt you still? Because this is my point, is like, I hope they can get over this. We talked about five massive mistakes. Is it possible for them to get over it? Is there a way? Well, yeah, sure. Patrick Williams could return to 40% from three and play really good defensively, and maybe they get over it, right? You know, maybe they can make a trade for Vooch that turns into something. Maybe they can kind of fix these mistakes, but there are certain mistakes that you can't fix no matter what. So why don't we talk about your biggest mistake, Mark? Let's get a little into a little session here.
Well, my biggest mistake, or most recent mistake that I regret, was agreeing to come onto this podcast. I think that's the one that jumps to mind straight away, I think. Another would be not fully disengaging to the Chicago Bulls as much as I would have liked. Sadly, I'm still an avid listener of the Big Red podcast, or Big Red Bus podcast. I still check in with the CHGO podcast every time they release an episode. I sadly still watch more Bulls games than I would have hoped. So that is a giant regret that I have in my life as well. But other than that, Frederick, I think I'm pretty okay.
Well, I got one for you. Story time. We'll finish up with story time, and we'll go our separate ways. We're almost an hour.
If you've made it this far into the Big Red Bus podcast, congratulations. You're part of an exclusive club of Big Red Bus listeners. Due to the somewhat embarrassing and slightly salacious nature of this particular story for C. Red Fred and his friend, we're only sharing the MP3 of this story time by request. To receive it, just email credfred@gmail.com with bus in the subject line. Again, email credfred@gmail.com with bus in the subject line. This weekend, you'll get an email containing an MP3 version of this story time, and a rare bonus track of Fred's epic song, Oh Mark, Look at Your Tweets. Thanks for listening, and welcome to the exclusive Big Red Bus Club.